Possible to touch the Buddha. You have learned the way to do it, and we can touch the Buddha deeply also. We need to pay attention to our breath. We breathe in and out mindfully, and when we touch our breath, we begin to touch the Buddha in us. So you can say that Thầy is my teacher, spiritual teacher, and he taught me how to touch the Buddha, and I can do it. The only thing is that how often you do it in your daily life. You can do it, but what is important is whether you do it several times a day, especially when you are not well, you don't feel well, you don't feel peaceful and happy, time to do it. Touch the Buddha in yourself in order to get better, because mindfulness is the Buddha in you, and when you touch mindfulness, you have peace, you have joy, you have serenity, and you take refuge in mindfulness in the Buddha. Today I would like to talk to you about another word, the word bodhisattva. You know, the Buddha is a bodhisattva. You may not know, but the Buddha is a bodhisattva. He is a great bodhisattva, and she is a great bodhisattva. Bodhisattva is someone that is awake, and therefore the Buddha is a bodhisattva. The word is written like this.
The word sattva here means being like you and me. We are living beings, and a bird is also a being, a living being. A tree is also a living being. But sattva here we are talking more of humans. So here is a human being, but living beings is a broader term. And body here means enlightenment, awakening, enlightenment, awakening. Someone who knows what is happening, who understands. So understanding, awakening is body. Is body. Bodhisattva means someone who is enlightened. So if you want to translate this into English, you say enlightened being. An enlightened being, you can touch them also, because there are many of them around. Shakyamuni is the name of the Buddha, our teacher. He lived 2,600 years ago. And he practiced mindfulness, and finally he attained full enlightenment in Sanskrit, anuttara sambodhi.
we don't need to attain full enlightenment in order to be called a bodhisattva. If we attain some enlightenment, we can be called a bodhisattva already. And the tree under which we sit will be called the Bodhi tree. You know, Shakyamuni Buddha, he sat under a pipala tree, kind of banyan tree. And after his full enlightenment, people and the children in that village called that tree the Bodhi tree. And that enlightenment is a great enlightenment, full enlightenment. I remember that there is a person whose name is Newton. He sat under an apple tree. And he was meditating on something. And suddenly one apple fell down. I don't remember whether the apple fell on his head or in front of him, but he attained some enlightenment. I think he found out the law of gravity or something like that. And I think that is an enlightenment. When a scientist discovers something that is a form of enlightenment, and that enlightenment helps people, helps him also. So the apple tree can be called a kind of Bodhi tree also. So now if you sit at the foot of the linden tree, and if you practice breathing in and out, that linden tree may have a chance to be called a Bodhi tree. You will get some enlightenment. A being that is enlightened knows what is happening in the present moment. For instance, the planet Earth, this beautiful planet Earth that is our mother, it is suffering a lot from pollution, from the destruction of many species that live on it, from the cutting down of so many trees, from the polluting of so many waters, so many rivers and oceans. There are people around us who live as if they don't know anything about that kind of sad things. They are not enlightened. But among us, there are those who are aware of the destruction that is going on concerning the planet Earth, and they can be called enlightened beings because they are enlightened on the situation of our planet. And when they are enlightened like that, compassion and love is born from them. They have compassion vis-a-vis the earth and many living beings that live on the earth. And that kind of compassion and love urge them to do something in order to protect the environment, to prevent people from polluting the water, polluting the air, cutting too many trees. And these people, we call them bodhisattva also, enlightened being also. But I have told you that there are bodhisattvas who are very great, and there are small bodhisattvas. Sometimes you are a little bit enlightened, but because you don't practice very much, that enlightenment cannot grow and become weaker and weaker. So you are only a very small bodhisattva. But every day, if you practice every day, breathing, looking deeply into yourself around you, you discover more truth. You are aware of many things that are going on, and the seed of your enlightenment in you grow and grow, and you become a greater bodhisattva. And when enlightenment is there, compassion will be born. And with compassion, you can do many things to help people and to help the world. We used to say bodhisattva, mahasattva. It means great being, being of enlightenment.
Bodhisattva, mahasattva. Maha means great. Mahasattva is great being. Bodhisattva, Mahasattva. Like Avalokiteshvara, she is a Bodhisattva, Mahasattva. She's a great being.
She has a great deal of understanding, awakening, compassion, and action in the world. And many of us learn her way, learn his way, in order to be of help in the world, to relieve the pain, the suffering of the world. So if you study the teaching of the Buddha, it means you want to become a Bodhisattva in order to remove, to transform the pain, the ignorance, the suffering in yourself. You become a Bodhisattva and you go out into the world and you help relieving the suffering in the world, protecting people, protecting animals, protecting plants. And I'm sure that if you are mindful enough in your daily life, you can meet with Bodhisattva. In Holland, I met with a great Bodhisattva who is a woman. She did not have she did not emit light. She does not emit light like Bodhisattva that is see in the Buddha home. She does not wear anything special. She just look like any other living being in Holland, any Dutch woman. But she is a great Bodhisattva. Was during the World War, she saved many dozens of Jews from being killed. She helped them to hide and then to transfer many Jews in order to save their life. And she did it in a very silent way. She's full of compassion and understanding. And I have seen Bodhisattvas like that a little bit everywhere, and that is why I have faith in humans and in other species on earth also. See a small animal suffer, and if you have compassion and you want to come to rescue that animal, suppose you see an ant that is drowning in a stream of water, and if you see that and if you want to save the ant from being drowned in the water, you come, you take a stick and you help the ant to climb out, and then you are a Bodhisattva. Sure, you are practicing the action of the Bodhisattva. And of course the seed of Bodhisattva is in you. But not only the ant suffers, many other species on earth suffer, including humans. And therefore, if you live awake, and if you see people suffering, and if you can come and help them to suffer less, you are true Bodhisattva. But we have to distinguish between big, great Bodhisattvas and smaller Bodhisattvas, because great Bodhisattvas, they have a lot of compassion, but they have a little bit, very little anger. Sometimes there are people who consider themselves to be Bodhisattva, but their understanding is not great enough, and they still have a lot of anger. That is why, instead of saving, helping people, they inflict a lot of suffering to other people. Of course, you have heard of Bodhisattva Saddam Hussein. He thinks that he is very important to his country and his people. He has a strong will to serve his country and his people, that I don't doubt. I think he has the willingness to make Iraq a great country and Iraqi people a great people, and he wants to make Iraq a prosperous and a great country. Now he has the willingness of a bodhisattva, but I don't know exactly how much understanding, how much enlightenment he has in himself. This is very important, because the amount of enlightenment and understanding determines the value, the greatness of a bodhisattva. There are some people who say that President Hussein is a great president. There are many people who say that he has made his own people suffer, his own country suffer very much. We have to look very deeply in order to really understand and see the reality. We cannot just rely on the press and on what the people are telling us. We have to be very careful. But it seems that many people have suffered during the war in Iraq. I suffer also a lot during the war in Iraq, and I'm sure that you also suffer, because all of us hear of the destruction of the bombing in Iraq. President George Bush is also a bodhisattva, and I don't know exactly how much understanding, how much enlightenment he has within himself. And the American people have to look deeply in order to determine how much understanding, how much enlightenment their president has. This is very important. When you elect a president and you trust him to handle the problems of your country, and then you have to be very careful. You have to select someone that surely has some wisdom, some enlightenment, some understanding. Because without understanding, without enlightenment, someone cannot have enough compassion and love. And without compassion and love, that person will cause a lot of distress, damage, destruction in the country and abroad. It seems to me that both presidents, they are still very angry. If I judge on what they and on the way they speak to each other, I see that both of them are still having a lot of anger within themselves. And I learned in the Maharatnakuta Sutra, a lesson given by the Buddha, this sentence. The Buddha said, when a bodhisattva gets angry at another bodhisattva, countless obstacles will be set up everywhere in the cosmos. That is written in the Maharatnakuta Sutra. When a bodhisattva gets angry at another bodhisattva, countless obstacles will be set up everywhere in the cosmos. It means that the bodhisattva who gets angry is not truly a great bodhisattva. And because of that anger, he may cause a lot of destruction, a lot of suffering to his people and to the people around him. And therefore, I do not want to hate anyone. I only wish that President Bush and President Saddam Hussein has to practice mindfulness in order to know what is really going on in the heart of their people, in the heart of their country, in order for them to see more clearly, to have more understanding, more enlightenment, so that compassion will be born in their heart. And with compassion, they will avoid the act of war and destruction and of killing. I know that all of you have suffered very much from the war in the Gulf. I did suffer also, and this is my reflection on Bodhisattva. So you are young. I know that you have the seed of bodhisattva of enlightenment in yourself, and the seed of enlightenment brings about compassion and love. And if you practice living mindfully by the use of breathing, by the use of walking, by the use of living your daily life mindfully, you will be able to touch the Buddha in you, to touch the bodhisattva in you, and then you become a true bodhisattva. You will be of help to all of us. Mindfulness is always mindfulness of something. Mindfulness as a seed in our store consciousness is a form of habit energy, the capacity of being mindful. And if you practice mindfulness every day, that seed of mindfulness will be strengthened every day. And when we want, it will be manifested very easily on the upper level of our consciousness, mind consciousness. When it is manifested in the upper level of our consciousness, it is mindfulness of something. Suppose we are practicing breathing mindfully, that is mindfulness of breathing. And when you practice mindfulness of looking, and then the object of your looking is the object of your mindfulness. When you practice mindfulness on your anger, anger is object of your mindfulness. And you know that mindfulness is a form of energy that will interact with its object. And it will bring about a kind of transformation. When we breathe mindfully, our breathing will be transformed. Our breathing will become deeper, more harmonious, slower, and it will bring about the peace, the harmony of the body and of the mind. Mindfulness of the breath, mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the mental formations, and so on. So mindfulness can be directed toward anything. And when mindfulness touches something, that something will change. I would like to repeat here that our practice stresses very much on how to touch the kind of elements that can nourish us, that can refresh us, that can heal us. And if someone feels that the practice is a little bit difficult, that someone has to come to a sangha to rely on a friend, two friends, three friends, in order to be able to do that. And I also said that when mindfulness begin to touch our pain, our suffering, our pain and our suffering will be transformed slowly. Mindfulness is like the blood in our body, because the blood in our body has the power to nourish the cells in our body, to wash away the waste, the residues that are eliminated by the cells in our body. And also the blood can heal the pain in our body. mindfulness is the blood of the of our psyche. But in order to heal the pain in our body, our blood should have a higher quality. It should have it should carry a lot of nutrition and also oxygen. Suppose I have a headache. The cause may be that I don't have enough oxygen in my brain. It is because the blood cannot circulate well in the mini vein in my brain. So I practice massage in order to bring the blood deeply into my brain, and it works. That proves that the blood has the power of nourishing and of healing. But we can always improve the quality of our blood. There are many zones that are not okay in our body. There are many painful zones. There are many kind of toxins that are kept in our body. And because of the lack of blood circulation, that kind of toxins cannot be washed away, and therefore it feels painful in many spots of our body. So the healing consists in bringing in these painful spots the blood toxins that are kept in our body. And because of the lack of blood circulation, that kind of toxins cannot be washed away, and therefore it feels painful in many spots of our body. So the healing consists in bringing in these painful spots the blood.
In order to increase the quality of the blood, you can do something. First of all, you can practice breathing. Therefore, I draw another circle next to a second circle.
I know that my lungs can contain about 3 liters and a half of air. But because I don't practice deep breathing and mindful breathing, my breathing is a little bit shallow. Every time I breathe out, I bring out only about 600 centiliters of air, and nearly 3 liters of air remain in my lungs. Not so good. And when I breathe in, I bring in only a little bit more than half a liter of fresh air with oxygen into my lungs. And especially when the air is not so clean, so fresh, I don't take much oxygen into my lungs. I cannot renew my blood and my body. So I should know how to practice deep breathing outside so that I can take more oxygen into my lungs. And when I breathe like that, deep, I can bring in 1 liter of clean air, and even more every time I make an in breath, and every time I breathe out, I can bring out 1 liter of polluted air or more out of my lungs. So one of the ways to improve the quality of your blood is to breathe well. This is to practice for the sake of the healing of your body. In order to do that, you should be able to make use of the respiratory muscles, intercostal muscles, and also the diaphragm. If you breathe with your abdomen, if you raise your abdomen while breathing in, inflating your abdomen, and then you take more air into your lungs. And when you breathe out, you bring back your abdomen as much as you can, and you can you can save as much air from your lungs as you wish. And breathing is an art. By breathing, you improve the quality of your blood. And together with the practice of the massage, you practice deep breathing, and you can heal your headache and other pains in your body. But there is another way of improving the quality of your blood.
I will draw another circle close to the circle of the pain and close the eye.
Mindful eating is the practice. Because in our daily life, we may ingest many kind of food into our body that could create toxins. If we don't eat well, if we eat too quickly, and especially when we eat the things that cannot digest easily, and then the intestinal transit will be slow and difficult. And therefore, putrefaction will take place in your intestines, and many toxins will be born, and your blood will, these kind of toxins will enter into your blood, and your blood cannot get as much nutrition as it should in this situation. And therefore, good eating is very important practice. You eat mindfully, you eat very slowly, you chew very carefully, mixing saliva with your food until your food becomes very tasty, and you swallow. In that case, you eat less, but you eat better, and the amount of nutrition you get will be double. And your blood will absorb only the nutrition and no toxin. And that is why the practice of mindful eating together with the practice of deep breathing are the two good practices in order to improve the quality of your blood.
And of course, when
your blood has that capacity, that high capacity of healing, you only have to do the last thing, massage. Try to bring that good blood into the painful spot in your body.
Therefore, I draw another circle near the circle of the diet. I call it massage. And massage. So.
When I press on a painful spot firmly, the old blood with the waste in it will have to go out from that spot. And when I release my finger, the new blood will come in. And if I continue that kind of operation, well, I bring the new blood in and I take the old blood out. That is the practice of massaging. Now I would like to tell you how our mindfulness works. It works exactly like the blood in our body.
I draw a circle representing the pain in our psyche, our despair,
our anger, our frustration, our fear, etc. Because there is no good circulation in our psyche, these blocks of pain are there intact, and there is no way to heal it except touching it with the blood of mindfulness. We have to bring mindfulness as a source of energy touching our pain. Modern psychology, modern psychotherapy is aware of that. If you can bring your pain into the zone of your consciousness, it will begin to heal. And therefore, many attempts are made in order to bring the hidden pain in your unconscious up to the level of the conscious. We have said that mindfulness has the power of revealing things. When things are beautiful, refreshing, mindfulness will reveal that wonder, that freshness, and help us to touch it. And we'll be nourished and supported by these wonders and freshness. Mindfulness can also reveal the nature of our pain, our suffering. If we touch our pain without mindfulness, it may be destroyed by our pain, but with mindfulness, we are safe. That is what we discussed last time in our talk given in English. And we know that when the mindfulness is there in our living room, we are safe. And we can welcome our pain to come up. The practice of the five remembrances is to deal with your fear, to invite your fear to come up, for you to smile at it and to make acquaintance. This is to immerse your fear in the zone of energies of mindfulness. That is the practice of healing. If your blood can touch the painful spot, it can have the effect of healing. If your mindfulness can embrace and touch the painful zones of your suffering, it will also heal.
Therefore, I draw a circle close to the circle of pain, and I call it the mindfulness. Mindfulness is the blood for our psyche.
Practicing mindfulness, using it as a torch, as a source of energy, touching your pain with that source of energy, and you heal yourself, you heal other people. The other day during walking meditation, we paused before practicing mindful movements. I said that walking meditation is to touch the earth with mindfulness. When you touch the earth with your feet mindfully, you'll be able to heal the earth. Because touching the earth mindfully, you know in what situation the earth is. And from that mindfulness, concern, compassion will be born. And compassion will be a source of energy for action. Action will be taken in order to heal the earth. And when you touch the earth is touching you at the same time. Like the right hand touching the left hand, it is being touched by the left hand at the same time. And when you are touched by the earth, you get healed also. So the healing is both ways. Mindfulness is the healing principle, the healing energy.
But mindfulness may be weak, may be poor, may be strong. It is like our blood. And we have to practice in such a way to improve the quality of our mindfulness. And curiously, the most important way to be with the flower, to be with the flower and to be the flower, that is being. But when the thinking settles in, well, the being ceases and the thinking begins. Thinking may be important, but if you keep thinking all day long, all night long, you don't have a sense of being. I think, therefore I am. It's not very correct. I think, therefore I am not very much. But if you practice mindful breathing, breathing in, I know that the flower is there. Breathing out, it's so beautiful. And if you continue like that, breathing mindfully, you can retain the flower as long as you like. So mindful breathing nourish awareness. It's like the fuel nourishing the fire. As long as you have fuel, the fire continues to be alive. As long as you continue the practice of mindful breathing, mindfulness is kept alive. And therefore the practice of mindfulness is the best way to nourish. The practice of mindful breathing is the best way to maintain mindfulness. And therefore I draw the first circle near to mindfulness. I call it breathing, mindful breathing.
And the Buddha has left behind a very precious document on breathing, the Anapanasutta, Anapanasati Sutta, the Sutta on mindful breathing. It's a wonderful document. It is available both in Pali and Chinese. And we have now the translation with commentaries. And we are very fortunate to have that text available for our practice. It's very important. And in the text, the Buddha proposed the 16 ways of breathing in order to nourish mindfulness, in order to calm and to heal, to transform. many generations to come we have to practice more, experimenting more in order to bring about new ways of practice of mindful breathing for the sake of calming and healing. Because our society is different from the society in which the Buddha and his monks and nuns live. So we have to explore more about the Sutta on breathing. It is a treasure to be unearthed and to be used in an intelligent way for our well-being, our transformation. The commentaries I wrote are just the first attempts to make use of the sutra in our time, and we should continue the work. When we come together,
for a retreat of 1 week or 2 weeks or 4 weeks. We profit from the presence of each other. We profit from our Sangha in order to practice mindfulness. We do everything in mindfulness, not only eating, but walking, sitting, drinking tea, singing, and so on. So singing can be a very deep practice. We are aware of what we see, and we visualize what we see. And practicing like that, using our time with wisdom, not to talk, not to think about many useless things, using our time to walk mindfully, to breathe mindfully, to observe things mindfully, to observe feelings mindfully, perceptions mindfully, and then we will give our mindfulness a chance. It will increase its power. And if we practice 21 days, it will become a habit. And we will have a good start. And we will begin to apply mindful living into our daily life, not only in the retreat, but in our daily life. And we may be able to invite members of our family to practice with us. It is possible to take a meal in mindfulness. Maybe you would like to eat the first 5 minutes in complete silence at your home, and asking the children to practice like that, and the rest of the time eating mindfully and talking mindfully. We can begin like this, and we can do it in other in our activities of the family also.
So breathing is a wonderful way to improve the quality of mindfulness. Everyone has a seed of mindfulness in his or her consciousness. But because we used to live in forgetfulness, that is why the seed of mindfulness cannot grow. And we know that the seed of mindfulness is the presence of the Buddha himself. You know, every time we breathe in and out mindfully, the Buddha in us begin to glow. And therefore, breathing mindfully is to be the Buddha in you. But there is another way of helping our mindfulness to go strong. And that is a kind of mental diet. We know that in our body there are already a lot of toxins, poisons, to be eliminated. And therefore, we practice mindful eating. As far as our psyche is concerned, we know that there are a lot of poisons in it already. The Buddha said that craving is a poison in us. Anger is a poison in us. Conceit, confusion, despair, violence are the poisons that are already existing in us. In our individual consciousness and in the body of our collective consciousness, we find a lot of poisons like that. And our society, our daily life, reflect the presence of these poisons in our consciousness. And the exercise offered the last time is to look deeply in order to identify these kind of poisons that are existing in our consciousness, individual, family, and social. And we know that these kind of poisons, these kind of toxins,
are harming the blood of mindfulness, because they prevent mindfulness to grow and to do the work of healing, exactly like our blood. If there is so much poison, waste, toxins in our blood, the blood cannot do the work of healing. If there is so much, there are so much poisons in our consciousness, and then the mindfulness cannot be strong, and it cannot do the work of healing. Therefore, a diet prescribed to us is very important. Not to consume, not to ingest more poisons in our daily life, and that is the practice of the precepts. Together with the people who live with us, we should practice refraining the watering of seeds of anger, of hatred, of violence, of craving in us. I practice mindfulness in order to prevent the watering of these seeds in me, in my daily life. But I need you to help me, because you are my Dharma brother, you are my Dharma sister, and I live together with you in my family or in my community, and I need you to support me in that practice, not to water the seeds of violence, of hatred, of anger, of despair in me. And if you help me, you support me, I will support you also, because we are Dharma brothers or sisters. And that is the meaning of practicing in a Sangha. Suppose we convene a family meeting with parents and children, and we discuss about the toxicity of television. There are good things in television. They are very interesting, informative emissions.